Bill Daly is my guest this afternoon. Bill, welcome to the broadcast.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for having me very much.
Oh, glad you could be here. Before we get into the conversation, because I was glad to get a PDF from Bree, so thanks. A big shout-out to Bree and everybody on your team over there who are keeping the public informed. If you could we get a little background on what your role is with the Port Hope and Area Initiative, Bill?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually the communications manager with the Port Hope Area Initiative, so I've been working on this project for about 8 years now. I live in the town of Port Hope, have for the whole time, and really communications has been one of the major driving factors. As this is a community recommended program, and it's really affecting all the property owners in town. So a big part of this is communication, so it's never really a dull moment.
Well, I can imagine that, absolutely. Well, one of the reasons why I played that song is because I think when I hear about how things are going and some of the stumblings and some of the roadblocks that we face, a lot of that has to do with just Mother Nature, right? I mean, some of this waste has been where it's been and how we're tackling this issue. What kind of a roadblock has Mother Nature played for you guys?
Well, yeah, in terms of construction, as you know, this is a project that has been going on for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of history. And in terms of when you're talking about Mother Nature, that's always has an impact on construction projects. But, of course, over the last year, as we've been in through this pandemic situation, it's of course, been extra challenging. And there's definitely been some delays to schedule due to that, though we have been working remotely the whole time, and we are back to work and out in the field where we can be. Of course, part of this is going into people's homes, testing for the presence of historic waste and all of that kind of thing, for obvious reasons, not wanting to, you know, having to make sure that we're keeping proper social distance. There's lots of visits that are required in people's homes and around them, and so we really had to be quite cautious, get different protocols in place, and also, you know, communicate with people. They may not feel comfortable with that kind of thing at the moment, though we have been pushing through, and we are getting back on track in terms of construction out in the community regardless.
All right, okay, so that's going to make a lot of people who have already been impacted by this, because clearly there have been a lot of residents already impacted by this, and there are still a large number of people that are going to be impacted by this, but how they are impacted is going to be changing. At least that's my understanding. There's a proposal underway to change how things are going to be done on a go forward. Is that my understanding?
Well, yes. Thanks for asking. So really what's gone on, and I'll have to give a little bit of context here, but what we're proposing to do, CNL, we're the company that's implementing the Port Hope Area Initiative project on behalf of both the government as well as the municipality of Port Hope and Clarington, where we operate. We have gotten to the point over the last 3 or 4 years where we've been starting construction of many of those properties that we've now tested. We're still testing many of the properties in town, but as some of them have gotten through the testing phase, we've moved to construction. Mm-hmm. And as we've gotten into construction, what we found is that some of the levels, that is the levels of contamination that we need to clean up to, because it's in our license, it's basically how we determine whether or not a particular property is clean, we found that certain levels in our criteria are so restrictive, so low, that we end up having a greater impact on some residents in town. So we've actually been hearing from people, to give you an example, we have to clean up arsenic in our criteria to a level that is a generic criteria level of 18 parts per million. Well, in so doing, we end up having to what we call chase that arsenic in through all people's yards. We have to go in under their decks, their gazebos, potentially into their foundation in order to chase this waste to get it down to a very, very low level. What we found in so doing is that people kind of look at us and they go, well, I didn't think it would be this much impact on my property. And they look at numbers like, well, what's the difference between 18 and 20 parts per million, for example? And we are hearing now from a number of people that they would like an opportunity to save some of the features on their property. And we feel the best way to get this, to be able to do this, is to actually change those levels. And I can talk about what that means.
So well, let's talk about chasing arsenic, because I think that's what you're just mentioning there. And I think that's what I was alluding to, by the way, when I was talking about Mother Nature, because this stuff moves through the soil. This does, you know, before, a few years ago, we were talking about plumes and things like that, not necessarily here in town, but we know that's the kind of language that has been talked about in the past when it comes to chasing down some of these contaminants. Is that something that has been an issue? And of course, when we're talking about levels at 18 parts per million, I mean, are some people are saying, well, you know, maybe I'm good with just 20.
Yeah, well, so to give a little bit of background, so some people might ask, I thought this was a radiological cleanup. Why are you even talking about arsenic? Well, actually, what we've actually found, sort of ironically, is that back when, by the way, the history here is that El Dorado Nuclear was the company that operated last century in town, and they basically refined radium. And that radium created fill material that was used in town for various purposes, you know, back before people understood the science.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that the pitch blend, or the raw material that was used in this process, included byproducts from silver mining that was also going on in the Northwest Territories, and that was brought down, and that contained arsenic in it.
Mm-hmm.
So as El Dorado processed their radium, they ended up creating a byproduct of arsenic. And, of course, the issue now has been that we found that, getting back to the chasing arsenic question, is that we've gone and tested properties, and we start to dig. And what we do is we'll dig an area where we think we're getting the waste, and then we'll go and we'll test the soil for verification that we've removed it. And what has happened is we've been able to test the soil, in many cases actually remove the radiologicals, but that arsenic moves quicker, and we keep chasing it to the point where, even though it's going to smaller and smaller levels or lower levels, we have to get to 18 parts per million. So we end up having to go farther and farther onto a property. And then we start to get into a question that people have, like, well, this is the gazebo that my daughter got married in, for example, and you can't really replace that. Even if you rebuild it, it will never be the same. Or these, you know, full mature trees, replacing them with saplings isn't the same thing. And people start asking the question, well, what is the purpose of this?
Well, and so, you know what? And if we can, Bill, sorry to cut you off, but I think that's actually the perfect spot for us to take a quick break.
Sure.
It's the first of three here. So when we come back, that's where we should pick up, I think, on this conversation, on that very point. Because you're right, replacing a century-old tree with a sapling. Here's the irony, of course, is that that century-old tree was probably planted at the same time that fill was being put there.
Very true.
So think about that for a quick second. My guest is Bill Daly from the Canadian Nuclear Laboratories. He is the communications director for the Port Hope Area Initiative. That's correct, right, Bill?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and we will be right back. Listeners, you're listening to Truly Local Radio Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. And welcome back, everybody. My guest on the line is Bill Daly, and Bill Daly is the communications director for the Port Hope Area Initiative. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
And so when we went to commercial there, we were talking about the impacts. And you know, one of the things I said to you when we were off air was, you know, a lot of people were like, we got to get this dealt with, we got to get it cleaned up, but perhaps they didn't actually think about what the complete impact was going to be, especially on things like the canopy, our green cover. Let's talk about that if we can, Bill.
Yeah, absolutely. So, very good point. This is one of the things, as I said, this is a long time in the making, and the project in terms of getting off the ground, we're talking about 30, 40 years in the making. And when these levels were developed, that was more than almost 20 years ago. So at this point, as we're getting to this stage where we're actually seeing the real data, and now we've tested so much of Port Hope, we've got more than 25,000 samples from testing that we're looking at, and we can see what's already happening on private properties, as I had mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also see that we've also got to clean up a whole bunch of public land in Port Hope. You'll see we're in the waterfront area. We're doing work all over town. The Highland Drive landfill is another big spot. And all of these places, many of them are covered by ravines, by trees, by forested area. And as we've now seen, we can see from our data that same arsenic issue has found its way outside of what we think the site boundary is that we need to clean up, we'll again need to chase, but this time we'll need to chase it into those ravines.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get to that soil would to be moved, to remove a significant amount of trees that are adjacent to all these public properties. So this is something that we wanted to make sure that we were flagging now and saying, you know what, we think we know what the issue is. We have a way to solve the issue, but in to do so, we need to actually change our license criteria. So we want to make sure everybody understands that this is the consequence if we were to go forward.
So moving forward, just to clarify that, could mean the removal of a significant number of what would be old growth trees in the town and in and in outlying areas as well, is also the point you're making, right?
Yes, and again, though we do have design plans and we have to replant and all of that, we can't, as you mentioned earlier, we can't replace a 100-year-old mature tree with a 100-year-old mature tree. So when we think about, you know, bigger picture environmental issues right now, the fact that, you know, not only this community but many across Canada and elsewhere are concerned about things like climate change and global warming, we look at a sort of a cost benefit here where we have fairly innocuous low levels of arsenic in soil that's undisturbed under tree canopy. Do we really want to go and get it at the expense of removing those trees?
Well, and that's a reason.
So we go ahead.
Sorry, I mean, that's a, and I think that's a fair question. I think because the point is you're saying that right now the level is 18. It's possible that you might not have to go to that level. Is there a number that would be at this point safe?
Yes. So what we have done, because you don't take this kind of thing lightly.
No.
And if we're going to make a decision to change something fundamental about the way we do the project, like the cleanup criteria, which is in the license, and the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission is our regulator, and we have to go through a process with them. So we've looked at it, and we've hired experts, like world experts, particularly in this field. And we said to them, can you find us what would still be an acceptable number where we could save a good amount of these trees as well as reduce the overall impact on people while still being protective of human health? So we didn't say, go out and find us this number. We said, what do you recommend? And we got back a scientific study that says that 100 parts per million would both be completely safe for human health, and I can talk about why, but also it would also reduce your impact, for example, on trees by about 60%.
What have you heard in terms of feedback thus far from the residents? Because I mean, this was to the point I made earlier when we came back, was, you know, you had a whole bunch of people in the community still to this day saying, we got to get this cleaned up, you know, this isn't safe, you know, we need to make sure this is, you know, dealt with, we can't believe this is such an issue, still 100 years later. But at the same time, they're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that was going to mean that tree had to go. Or, geez, I didn't realize you were going to have to dig up my driveway. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's kind of it.
I mean, this is what we're dealing with right now, right?
This is precisely it. And so, you know what, you raise a good point. That is sort of the conflict that we have, where there are certain people, that, especially people who've been here longer, who kind of remember, you know, this was something that the community pushed for. It's something that at the time they thought, you know, we need a once and for all cleanup. That means that this waste issue will be kind of done and buried, and pardon the pun, but it will be out of the way, and we can move on. And we don't want to have a situation where it's a half cleanup and then you keep having to come back. Well, on the other end of that, you've got the property owners and the people who may be newer to the community, because I don't know about you, but I've seen houses are selling, and we actually do market analysis every year, and the people are buying houses in this area, and there are new people with new understandings of things and new motivations, new things that they care about, and they're more concerned about well, what are you doing to this beautiful place, that I bought, right?
Okay, because I want to ask you that question. Actually, you really raised an interesting point because, you know, when I was growing up, I'm 54, almost 55. When I was growing up and other people I know in my age group who are growing up, who are moving out this way, they were like, yeah, you know, you don't want to live there because, you know, I mean, the town motto, the town that radiates friendship, people are like, you know what I mean? So there was this whole, but from what I'm hearing from you is that, you know, based on the new science and what people have become aware of in terms of how information is being transmitted to people, because part of the problem for that negative portrayal was people weren't getting any information, right? How has that changed? How has that changed for Port Hope, do you think, Bill?
Well, I can say from our experience of being at the office where we talk to, you know, thousands of people every year, and we always talk to people who are looking to buy because it's something that we, you know, we work with the local real estate agencies and, you know, we send them to us if they have any concerns. What we found is the nature of the concerns have changed. It's much more about what's going to happen to my property.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reason for you to have to clean up to such stringent levels if you're going to be having this much impact on a place where I've come from? Or, you know, many people are only real kind of waking up to what Port Hope is now.
Mm-hmm.
They're realizing they're leaving the GTA, they're coming out here, and they're realizing there's a beautiful town here. Now, at the same time, we remind people that there's still a huge construction project that we need to do, and that we will still be removing the radiologicals from the properties.
Yes.
And doing what I think most people assumed was going to happen. What we're simply saying is that we don't want to leave them in a situation where we have a stringent cleanup criteria and that we don't give them a full cleanup because they want to save something on their property. But then we can't give them that compliance letter, that piece of paper that says you're clean, because there will be parts of the property that hadn't been cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
So because of our criteria still being at 18. So if we were to change that criteria, we could clean up that property and then provide them with a letter that says they're clean. So people are concerned about, will I be able to sell my house?
Right.
Things like that, right? So there's lots of other things. And we found that actually more so in a lot of cases than concerns about the health impacts of this material, which really it's public information.
Mm-hmm.
That you can find on this. But again, you can come to us. We've done studies and we can show that really there's no health risk in changing this criteria.
Right. And so the issue still remains for you all, and why you're having to go through this process right now, is that you can't just decide, you know what, we've done the research, this is safe, so we're just going to do it at this level. The points you've raised some significant points. The fact that people need, they're going to have to get a letter that's basically signed off saying that's legit, and that's one of the reasons. I mean, take us back to why, because at this point you're having to reapply for the license, right? Or at least apply for changes to the license.
Yeah, to amend the criteria.
Right.
Everything else in terms of safety and in terms of operations would remain. It's
mm-hmm.
just sort of like how we say we're done kind of changes.
Right. Why? Now, again, I'm sure there are people listening going, okay, well, if it's so insignificant, because it sounds to me, again, the way we're discussing it, it doesn't sound all that significant. Why do you got to go through these hoops?
Like, do you mean as a property owner? Or
if it's just simply a matter of saying, well, you know, we've done the research, because you're proposing changing it from 18 to 100,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, a lot of people are probably listening going, well, why can't you just do that? Why do you have to go back through that, jumping through the hoops thing, through the bureaucracy? Why?
Right. And it's a good question. And the truth is that this is a serious thing to change a license. Again, this cleanup criteria was actually developed by the community in consultation with scientists, government, and at the time that the criteria was chosen, back around 2005 or so, it was based on this principle, not again about health ultimately. It was a principle that all of the lands that are being remediated could be used for whatever foreseeable use in the future, as though there was worry that there was some sort of restriction because of, you know, you'd have waste on your property.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, because of the consultation and because of, you know, you didn't know yet fully what the extent of, for example, the arsenic was.
Mm-hmm.
People said, well, if there is a generic criteria, if there's already something published by, say, the Ministry of the Environment or other regulators, then you should default to that. And by defaulting to that, it would mean that you won't have any restrictions. Well, since then, we've seen that really, other than one or two cases, there's really no restrictions for you now. If you're a private property owner, you're zoned residential,
mm-hmm.
the waste is not stopping you today from doing whatever you like with your property. So that was sort of the genesis of this. But in terms of your question about, you know, why is it a big deal? Well, we can do all the studies that we want at CNL, and we can tell you that we believe this is the right thing to do, and we firmly do. However, mm-hmm. we need other agencies. The Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission also has their scientists that need to review our work,
right.
They need to review what we submitted, not to mention the Ministry of the Environment, and the Municipality of Port Hope also wants to be sure that the other agencies concur with what we've done. And they also want to know that the public's had a chance to understand this, too, before we sort of just, it's not something you just do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
This is a community-requested project. We need to do what the community wants. We've just noticed that there's a potential problem here, so we're asking the community, are you sure this is what you want?
So, and again, that public consultation, is that over now, or is that still ongoing?
Ongoing. We just did a public meeting, about 100 attendees last week,
mm-hmm.
and we'll continue to do them. We're offering discussion groups, focus groups with smaller groups of individuals. We're continuing to present to real estate boards, to environmental groups, committees of council, and we'll continue to do that sort of up until the point when the hearing happens. We're hoping in spring next year, and that means then the CNSC will look at our evidence and take 60 days to decide from
mm-hmm.
that point.
Well, now, as far, because right now you're doing Zoom meetings, right? Are there any in-person meetings? Because some of the, like, I've talked to listeners, like, I have a listener, unfortunately, I was not able to get to their questions because they dropped an envelope off and I didn't get it, so unfortunately. But, you know, this person doesn't do, you know, email or any of that stuff. They just want to be able to go sit in a room and look at you and talk with you and you know, have in a public forum. So more and more, I think the real issue is a lot of people want to be able to get it more involved, but, you know, they don't want to have to do it through Zoom chats because they don't like the format, or they just would prefer to be in a town hall. Is there a way that can still be done? Is there are there small ways to do those kinds of meetings?
Well, by the way, you know, I agree with those listeners because I also find it quite challenging to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, our policy, again, CNL is a safety-first organization, and so our policy is that we have no interactions that are not absolutely necessary in person. So what we've tried to do, because there have been many people that have raised that concern
uh-huh.
with us directly, and so what we've tried to do is find ways where we can do one-on-one phone calls, or that we can do, you know, smaller meetings with just a few people.
Mm-hmm.
We can provide people information in every single way except for in person. We can also mail them all the information, which
right.
we've been doing as well. However, you know, depending on how things go, we would really like to get to an in-person point. I think it works better. At this time, until we see how it goes with the pandemic, we're still sort of keeping in step with sort of public guidelines for meeting in person. And so
mm-hmm.
our policy has remained as a kind of remote at the moment, safety first.
Well, our policy at the station is one guest at a time. We're 2 meters apart. Our next conversation could be live, Bill, if that would help the listeners out, because then people could take calls. One of the problems with our current system is I can't take a call when I'm getting a call because it creates a feedback loop. But, you know,
oh, I see.
You know, who knows? Maybe next time we'll have you in the studio. I want to get.
I
want to look at these three issues that are in the PDF. What three issues you're hearing? Because analysis of 25,000 soil samples has determined that a significant number of property cleanups are being driven by low levels of arsenic, as you and I have been discussing for the last while now, rather than the radioactive contaminants. so resulting in these unintended consequences. So property cleanups are taking longer. They're more extensive. They're causing residents distress. Cleanups have a greater impact on Port Hope's tree canopy, raising community concerns about the effect on nature and the environment itself, as we talked earlier about how the air gets cleaned by the trees. More properties require cleanup than anticipated, which is extending the schedule and the cost of the PHAI. So what is being proposed for the listeners out there? And I'm just reading the PDF, Bill. The proposed changes will reduce unintended project impacts while still being protective of human health and the environment by shortening the timeline and the extent of excavation on many of the properties, the construction you spoke of, requiring the removal of fewer trees, especially in areas where trees are mature, and reducing the number of properties requiring a cleanup, which will shorten the duration of the Port Hope Area Initiative in Port Hope, as well as help to keep the project within the approved funding. So all of that is being talked about. That's what's looking at being changed. The listeners, if they want to get involved, and by the way, I'm going to read this to you, and at the end we'll read it to you one more time. How can you get more information? You can go to their website. And for those of you that use the computer anyway, info@phai.ca. That's phai.ca, or you can give them a call, 905-885-0291. Someone will return your call if there's not a live person in the office, right, Bill?
That's correct.
And to learn more, you can, as I say, go online. You can check off, there's three boxes. Do you want to learn more? Attend a virtual information session. You can do that. CNL is hosting a number of them, as we were talking just a moment ago, and we're going to go to a break in just a moment. And this will give the listeners an opportunity to go to the website while they're listening to our conversation, and because you can give feedback on the proposed changes. They're going to be addressed at a public hearing. The Canadian Nuclear Safety Laboratory Commission is having, hopefully in 2021. That hasn't even been confirmed yet, right, Bill? We'll talk about that when we come back from the break.
Okay.
And you can provide feedback to CNL immediately and or directly to the commission through written interventions. And as you know, listeners, I always say, write a letter. Somebody has to open it. My guest on the line is Bill Daly with CNL. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. And we will be right back with more of our conversation, Bill. Stick around, listeners. And we're back with Bill Daly, Communications Director for the CNL and the Port Hope Area Initiative. Welcome back, Bill. Got a question from a listener. Thanks for calling in. Two questions, actually. One to do with the West Beach Ring Road. Why was that? Why did that happen? Why was that necessary? And the second to do with contractors. What's happening with contractors? Why are they leaving the job? Can you talk about the West Beach Ring Road first?
Sure. I mean, I can. So just to be clear, the Ring Road proposal, which from my understanding is no longer going forward,
okay,
is actually not to do with CNL. It's due to do with Cameco and the municipality of the Port Hope. However, my understanding is that that is not going forward.
Okay. So let's hope that's true, and I hope that answers the listener's
yeah.
question. The next question.
Go to Cameco for that one.
Okay. And is that the what about the contractors? Has there been a problem with contractors? Are contractors leaving the job? And if so, why? Is it taking too long for them?
Well, yes, there has been some issues that we're working through with contractors. Again, going back to the pandemic this year, we had scheduled a lot of work to happen in town, you know, between March and now,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Sure.
And when, you know, end of March, when that hit and we went into a lockdown mode, we basically removed everything in the project to essential services only, so stuff for safety and to keep our sites in a secure condition. But all of those other things that we were going to do, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we couldn't move forward on, which,
okay,
of course, means that has a spin-off effect to your contractors, and we've been working through that with them, and we do have contractors in place to get restarted now.
Okay. Well, and again, I hope that answers the question for that listener. And again, thanks to Ed for submitting questions. I was not able to get to them all, and just glad I could get to these two questions. What are these the kinds of questions you're getting, really, Bill? About, like, what kinds of questions are you hearing? I mean, other than the, oh my God, I can't believe you're tearing down the gazebo my daughter got married in. What are people concerned about? Other issues about the construction? Are they concerned about timelines?
Well, yeah, again, connected to this issue has been the way that we actually do this work on properties is we contract out work from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, and we started in neighborhoods in town, what happens is that, you know, we try to get this work done across the entire neighborhood so that we don't have to continuously go back to individual properties and redisturb people. Plus, it's really complicated to contract out that way.
Sure.
But because of this issue surrounding the criteria being so stringent, it means that we're not only on individual properties, but we're in entire neighborhoods for much longer than we thought. And when I say we're in there, it means we've got lots of construction equipment,
yeah,
traffic, parking, lights, noise. So again, the thinking here is that will also mitigate some of that and make that a lot less stressful for people who they think maybe a month or two, but then it's going on, and they still have this kind of construction zone in their backyard.
Were people not, I mean, I have to think that people maybe didn't realize how big this project was going to be. I mean, are there neighborhoods in Port Hope that are not affected by this? And are there more neighborhoods than perhaps were expected?
Well, so there are some neighborhoods that won't be much affected, and those are mostly new builds when mm-hmm. you think about, you know, when El Dorado was operating. However, what we have found due to the arsenic is that we thought that in total there'd be about 350 to 400 properties to do based on
mm-hmm.
estimates. Now the data is suggesting that's upward of 1,200.
Wow.
So that's more than triple what we had initially anticipated. And again, I've seen that if that arsenic criteria changes, then we can reduce that back down to somewhere close to where we initially mm-hmm. had anticipated.
So with regards to the radioactive material, is there more of that than was presumed as well? I mean, I know we know arsenic is a big problem, but how much of the uranium, has that number been bigger? And because we're talking about thorium, radium, uranium. In the proposed changes, only two changes being proposed. Of course, the arsenic we talked about raising from 18 to 100, from 23 to 35 for the uranium. But the radium and thorium, I mean, those numbers haven't changed, but have the number of properties impacted?
So for the other, it's sort of like what we have overall is we have more waste in general. And when we talk about waste, that you nailed it. It's those four parameters. So radium, thorium, uranium, and arsenic. What we do actually have more overall historic waste to deal with than we initially thought.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's still manageable, except for that when you get into the arsenic makes it become... So even in these cases where we won't actually go all the way back down to, say, 300 properties, but in many of those cases that we have to do, where there's arsenic, if we change the criteria, we might have to do a little bit to get that radiation, the radium, but we don't have to do all that extra work on the property to get the arsenic, if that makes sense.
How deep are we going here? I mean, is this just topsoil? Are we just scraping off, you know, 5 inches of soil? It's just basically the grass and, you know, a couple inches below that. How deep?
How it works when you dig is that you end up going deeper to go wider. So even if it's not always, and we've got everything, things can be 4 or 5 meters in the ground all the way to almost at the surface. But really what happens is if we're testing, say, 2 meters down
mm-hmm.
and we continue to find it, then we have to go deeper because we're going wider. And so it's something that just, it's really about kind of the extent overall more mm-hmm. than the depth. In fact, if something is very low down depth, we do have a special circumstances protocol where we may say to the property owner, it doesn't make any sense to go down this deep. There's no chance that you'll ever come in contact with it, things like that. But that's very rare. For the most part, if we see it, then on our testing, then we'll continue to chase it. And it's just by virtue of the continuous digging that you end up going wider and deeper.
Well, exactly. And, you know, you raised the really interesting point of whether or not people are going to come in contact with it. And we're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, that is the issue that I think we should wrap this show up with, this issue of chasing contact. And we will be right back, listeners. My guest is Bill Daly from the Port Hope Area Initiative. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time. If you do have a question, the commercial break is about a minute. You can give me a quick call at 905-372-2391, and hopefully I can get it for you. Thanks, Bill. Stay on the line. We'll be right back. our next subject, Bill, which was chasing contact. The real issue is, for folks, it's about health, right? This is about health and wellness and the impact. And, you know, we've seen historical impacts to people's health. And let's talk about that very part about, you know, because, you know, in the age where we tend to favor the economy over health, this whole project is about favoring health over perhaps the economy, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to note a few things. First of all, that this project, though there was always a perception that there was some sort of health concern, and I mean, there's been media articles from the Toronto Star in the mm-hmm. past, kind of putting Port Hope in a spotlight. The truth of the matter is that this Port Hope has been studied quite extensively over time, and the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission actually looked at about 40 different studies and did a final report that shows that there's really no connection between the waste and any incidences of health risk or cancer or anything mm-hmm. when you look at comparative communities. And so it's important to remember that this was a community-recommended solution to an environmental problem.
Exactly.
And really, it was the Government of Canada who took over the Crown Corporation El Dorado, who took responsibility for the waste, and we're cleaning it up because of that, get the liability off the books for the government, and do it because the community asked. But really, people are safe living in Port Hope now, without this project. And what we're trying to do now is we're trying to show that, you know, we're reestablishing, even with the most current data that we ourselves have gathered over the last 15 years of testing Port Hope specifically, we're now showing that really this stuff, it really is confirming now what has already been known, that there really isn't a health risk connected to this mm-hmm. waste. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to still remove the radiologicals to make sure that the stigma of the radiation goes away. But we're saying we don't necessarily want to do this at the expense of other things. In this case, I'd say mostly the environment.
Exactly. And again, thanks for saying that. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. I think there's a lot of listeners. There's a lot of listeners out there that wanted to hear exactly that same point being, if you will, hammered home. Because, you know, this is an environmental initiative because people asked for it for the most part. And it really is, as you say, the government owning a bad decision. You know, proving once again you can't just walk away from these kinds of things.
Yeah, so that's really what this is.
So now we move to the next stage. This is the public stage, though. How has the public stage been working for you? I know COVID's been a problem in terms of forum and outreach, and this is one of the reasons why I was glad to have you on the show today. And big shout-out to Bree Nixon for making this happen. Because, you know, people really want to be able to get in the room, and they want to ask you questions to your face. They want to know about other things. And I'm sorry, I just had a caller who was trying to call through at the last part of that last commercial break, and I wasn't able to get to the phone. Unfortunately, it's just me here in the studio, listeners, for those of you that are trying to call in. So this is why I think it's important that we have you on the air. This will be the first time. Hopefully, we'll have you back another time to talk about how things are going. Where is the process right now? Are we just in the public consultation stage then?
Yeah, so on November 26th, by the way, we're looking at hosting another smaller public meeting, but it is open to anyone. They can contact us, go to the website, as you mentioned earlier, and we can put you on again. It will have to be a virtual meeting, but we want to keep having them. So November 26th is the next. We'll continue to schedule them. But again, we're available every day. Yes, not in person, but we are available every week, mm-hmm. business day, and anyone can call us at any time. We've got tons of information on our website. We've got tons of studies, reports. We can talk to you about anything from environment to your own property or anything in between. And then what will happen is eventually when it gets to the point next year of going in front of the commission for the hearing, the commission will actually make it known when this is going to happen and make it public. And all people can also, they can give their feedback to us, but they can also give it directly to the commission. And like you said before, if you put it in writing, somebody has to read it.
That's
so,
right.
You know, we encourage it. We want people to, you know, whatever your opinion is, we mm-hmm. want to know whether or not you agree with it, or you think you need more information, or maybe there's just something in there. If we sift through it, we can find out maybe there's something we're just not communicating that we want to communicate mm-hmm. better, or maybe there's something worth thinking about. And so that's why we want people to give us the feedback, and we're going to be submitting that as well to the commission to say, here's who we talked to, here's what the themes were.
Right. Final word, Bill, what's the one thing you want to say about the Port Hope Area Initiative that maybe people need to be aware of?
Well, the one thing that I should make everyone aware of right now is that if you do want to have your property tested and you live in Port Hope in the rural or the urban area of Port Hope and you haven't yet signed up to have your property tested for the eventual cleanup of your property, this is the last year that we will be offering the testing. So if you call us next year, you may be too late and we'll have to remove you from the program because, again, this is a program on a schedule, on a timeline. Most everyone, over 4,000 people, are participating. There are a few outliers. If you still haven't signed up, call us today.